No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People the Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I'm joined by my co-host, Marilia Duffels, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. Marilia is still on travel, coming back from Europe. She'll be on next week, but tonight it's just me, and I have a very, very important guest, Mina Bayat. Mina is a blogger at the Times of Israel, a commentator and a columnist, and she writes, she covers politics in Iran, the Middle East, and the United States. She's written several pieces on these subjects, and she was born in Tehran, Iran, and she's joining us from Oslo, Norway, where she lives now, and we're so thankful to have her on the show. Mina, thank you so much for being with us.
Hello, thank you very much for having me. I'm honored.
Well, I've got to tell you, the first man that I ever worked for was President Jimmy Carter. And, of course, we remember the original Iranian Revolution where they took hostages, and that was very much a part of my early political life. So I've always been concerned about Iran. And yes, these protests that we see now, that's really what we want to talk to you about, how these brave women are protesting their oppression. So let's first, before we even start that, give us some sense of what life is like in Iran. The population of Iran is 87 million people, and it's 636,000 square miles. It's the 17th largest country in the world. I'm not sure everybody gets that. But what's it like for women in Iran today?
Senator, Iran is very misunderstood. It's a religious dictatorship. And it means that the government interferes in every aspect of Iranians' lives. So it means that they force women to cover themselves. They force men to dress properly. They raid houses when men and women are mixed and they are having a party. So they raid these houses. If they are drinking alcohol, they raid the houses. If a musician is playing by the side of the street and people are gathering to watch, the morality police comes or the police comes, they arrest them, they abuse them, they beat them up. So they're, the government is interfering in every aspect of their lives. And also, at the same time, they are suffering from poverty, from inflation, because the country is under sanctions, because the regime wants to build a nuclear bomb or is investing in nuclear facilities. All the money that comes in, which is not that much now, goes to regime's proxies and militias all over the Middle East, to Hezbollah in Lebanon, to Houthis in Yemen, to militias in Iraq, and destabilizing the whole region. And if someone, for instance, has a critic to the regime or whatever, or writes something on social media, so the government comes and arrests them. You have teachers, you have students, journalists, even influencers and athletes that have been arrested for saying something, for criticizing the regime. They arrest them, they beat them up, and when they come to a breaking point, they bring them on TV and force them to confession, to be a foreign agent or something like that. So the situation in Iran is terrible. And it is not just for women, it's for men as well. But the women's situation is pretty bad also because they have a gender apartheid. The clergy officially says that women has less value than men. So they can't ask for divorce, they can ask for custody, they get half of what men get when they get their insurance money, they can become, president, they can sing, they are not allowed to ride a bike, etc. So the situation is terrible, and this is a nation that's very young nation, and deprived of the basic human rights. So it's very difficult for people in Iran to live, and that is why now they are protesting. They are protesting now for third week. Tonight I was tweeting about what's happening in Iran. They raided the university where the students earlier was protesting. It was terrible images that was coming out of Iran. So we tried to share them on Twitter. So the world knows what's happening in Iran right now.
Well, is that why you're in Norway? Because you criticized the government and you can't do it from inside the country. You can only do it from outside the country. Is that right? You have to be somewhere where you can safely do it. Well, let me ask you, is this, look, we see the women pulling their headscarves off and burning them in public, which must be they must be very, very brave to do this, especially in a country that has, people that they have a job patrol. Don't they have people that go out and make sure that you have scars on your head? This is crazy to us in the West. But so these women are very, very brave. But you say that this is also a regime that is, works against men as well. Are men supporting this new protest? Are there men out there in Iran that are supporting this protest, or is this mainly women?
Yes, when men are supporting Iranian women, they are standing shoulder to shoulder with them fighting the regime. And we have to realize, because hijab is the symbol of the regime, and they have been forcing hijab, and not only hijab, you have to cover your body too. You have to go with pants if you are a woman. So, and they have been forcing this dress code for over four decades. So, and men are also fed up because these are their wives, their daughters, their sisters who are being abused. So men are also fighting shoulder to shoulder with women against the regime and against its symbol, which is a hijab compulsory hijab, to be exact. They are fighting against it together.
Well, but this is basically what's happened recently with the killing of Mahsa Amini, a 22-year-old who was pulled off the street and sent to a re-education camp and then died. Isn't this mainly about holding women down? Isn't that what the hijab is about? And the other restrictions, isn't it really about holding women down?
Yes, they are holding women down. They are suppressing women, and they have been suppressing women for over four decades now. So clearly, they are discriminating women, but they are also discriminating men, but of course discriminating women more. But the hijab and this compulsory hijab, this has been going on for 4 decades now, and it's so good. I mean, it's as tragic as it is, but Mahsa Amini's tragic death it has caused the world to focus and give attention to this problem we are having in Iran, which is like which is enforcing women to cover themselves. I think it's unique in the world. No such country has. I mean, no other country has such law.
Well, that's true, but certainly we see in America, for example, the same sort of movement among people in politics, certainly not as severe as anything that you're talking about in Iran, but we do see in America the extremist religious people trying to interfere with politics, ban books, put certain restrictions on women. You probably know about the Supreme Court's recent decision, and how big an issue abortion has become. So we see this happening around the world. We see this in other places as well. And I think that, the Iranian situation is certainly the most severe example of this. But let me ask you, the woman in question, Ms. Amini, was Kurdish. Did this have something to do with it? By the way, if you're listening and you don't know, there's a population of 87 million people in Iran and 8 million Kurds. So there's certainly the minority population. They make up a little less than 10% of the population. So was that part of the motivation, you think, because she was a Kurd?
I don't think so. Of course, she comes from Saqqez, which is a city in Kurdish part of Iran. But this is not riot. No. The whole country now is protesting. And we have been, over 100 people are killed. So, and you see the protests all over Iran. Of course, the protest started with Mahsa Amini's funeral at the Kurdish part, but then very fast it spread around Iran to all over Iran, and people are still protesting because if you listen to what people are saying, they are shouting death to dictator. They are shouting mullahs get lost. They say we don't want Islamic Republic, which is the regime is called Islamic Republic. So they don't want that. So it started with her tragic death, but this is not a riot or a protest. It is something that concerns all Iranians from all walks of life. If you look at the protesters, you see they are old, they are young, they are rich, they are poor, they are tired and fed up with the system.
Well, I can certainly understand that. And is that what's different about this from the protests that we saw in the late 1970s, like the 1979 revolution? I read in the New York Times that the slogan for that revolution was bread, work, and freedom. And now the slogan is women, life, and
women,
freedom.
Life.
Yeah. So that's the big difference, that this is really about women, and that it's getting support from men as well in Iran. What about the world? Is the world coming to your aid? We're certainly getting attention on this issue in the United States, but are we doing anything to help?
This is a very good question, Senator. I want to thank you for asking me this question, because you know, I work in the media, and for a long time I've been wanting, you know, I was dreaming about a media coverage of what's happening in Iran. And we finally are getting it, and the world focus is on Iranians right now. But to be honest, I don't think that the world is doing very much to help. You see, I was listening to National Security Advisor of U.S., Mr. Jake Sullivan, and he said that we are supporting the demonstrators, but we are also pursuing the nuclear deal. And so it, as though these two are the same thing, but they are not. They are the opposite of each other. If you are helping the regime, if you are pursuing the nuclear deal, so it means that you have to take off the sanctions and give Iranian government money. And by giving them billions and billions of dollars, so you inject money to a system of suppression. So these two are very different. And also in Europe, where I live, I have been actually writing here articles asking the foreign minister to condemn Iran. And she wrote back and said that we are having a dialogue with Iranians and things like that. So I don't think the world is really serious to do something and help Iranian people. Please help Iranian people. Please stand by them. They are risking their lives. They are being killed on the streets because they are doing the uprising. Please help them and stand by them. That's my quest.
Well, let me ask you, you've talked about poverty and how this has played a role in you know, people being upset with this regime and wanting to rise up against it. Have the sanctions been instrumental in that regard? The sanctions that we have on our ground, have they really put pressure on this government, you think?
I mean, it's clear that the sanctions has weakened the economy. There's no doubt about it. But the thing is that when you see Iranians demonstrators right now, the protesters, they don't shout down to America or damn the sanctions and things like that. You don't see slogans like that that the government all the time focuses on. They say down with the dictator, down with the supreme leader, death to dictator, and these kind of slogans. So it that shows where their focus is. By giving, in 2009 we had an uprising. I don't know if you remember the Green
yes.
Revolution in Iran.
Yes, yes, the Green Revolution. Yes.
Yes. Yes, and thousands of Iranians were on the street. And I remember they were shouting. Their slogan was, Obama, are you with us or are you against us? And it was back then it was President Obama, who was the United States president. And he chose to stand by the Iranian government. He pursued the nuclear deal. He ignored the protests. He injected money into this system. So, I mean, this is a system that's not working. It's killing people inside Iran. It's killing people outside Iran. It's killing Americans. I mean, they started with taking Americans hostages, if you remember, the same year they came to power. And then they continued with that. And even in Iraq war, they continued killing Americans in Iraq through their proxies in Iraq. So this is an ideological regime. If you want to inject money into this system, you are not going to change their DNA and how they are. This is who they are. I mean, and I think sanctions. Yes, Iranians are under pressure by sanctions. But, you know, when you inject money into this system, the system in Iran is for the people who are governing a system like a mafia-like system. People who are are working for the government, I mean, having good positions, they get all the money. The embezzlement on billions of dollars. you know, it's such a system that people are living in. So they might get a little bit of money, but the most money will go to Iran's proxies, to nuclear facilities, and and this dysfunctional military clergy system. So I disagree that by injecting money into the system, by taking off the sanctions, you take the burden off the shoulder of people. But because they will get arrested again for not covering themselves enough, for drinking alcohol, for criticizing the regime or whatever, that will not change.
Well, given what you said, where boycotting oil and the world is doing this, lots of places in Europe, boycotting oil from Russia, oil and natural gas, because of the Ukrainian situation. Should we be doing the same thing with Iran? Should we boycott Iranian oil?
I think that could be one solution. Of course, this is a very complicated situation. But, I remember when in Trump era, President Trump era. So I remember I was following the news on Iran, and I remember they were counting minutes for President Trump to go away, so they could get their hands on the money, and so the sanctions are off. Because they would think that the Democrats, like President Obama, would save them again by taking off the sanctions and pursuing the nuclear deal. And now Iran is selling oil, and the exact number I am not quite sure, but something like Iran is selling oil to China.
Yeah.
And so they have, the current government has given Iran some kind of waiver. So they are selling a bit of oil to China. And the funny thing is that Russia is stealing this market from Iran now that Russia is sanctioned, is stealing the market to China and India. So the clergies or the mullahs in Iran, they are having a terrible time because the money is short. But they think that this is temporary because they hope to get the nuclear deal and to get the money and to get the sanctions off. That's their lifeline.
Well, given the fact that let's talk about that connection for a minute, because we know there's. Iran has sent drones to Russia to help them. The Chinese are buying Iranian oil. Do you see an alliance developing here, a political alliance developing, a new alliance, I guess, between Russia, China, and Iran?
Yes, I see that, and this has been coming for a long time. You know, the Supreme Leader Khamenei, he has been always had this, especially in the recent years, after the nuclear deal was failed. So he always says that, look at the East, look at the East, which means that he is looking to make allies with Russia and China. And so we have been, in the past year, so we have had major contracts with China and Russia there. So they are benefiting from Iran being so weak, so taking advantage. And this is, a new bloc rising, against the West, with Russia, Iran, and China. Yes, it's definitely a new bloc and new allies.
There are rumors all around the West that the Ayatollah Ali Khamenei is in poor health. Does that have any impact on this, you think? You think people are standing up now because they see the central government being weaker?
To be honest, we are watching the situation very closely. He hasn't been appearing on TV or saying anything. Before in 2019 uprising, we had an uprising in 2019 also. He came to TV and addressed the situation after a while, but now there is no sign of him. So there is a speculation that he is sick, and there has been news. I think it was New York Times that wrote that his health is in poor condition. So we don't really know, but this is going to have an impact on the situation. Some say that it may be a bad thing. Some say it may be a good thing. Some say that maybe the radicals, like the besieged or the revolutionary guard, after he's dead, so they might come and make a coup. And some say no, if he is gone, then the whole system maybe, comes down. Also, so it's very difficult to say, yeah. But there's no doubt that he hasn't been, he's not appearing on TV, he's not holding any ceremony or something like that, which is very suspicious for him. He usually comes on TV and having this arranged ceremonies to address the code people.
And do you think a coup, would that change things for women, or would there just be another Ayatollah like this Ayatollah put in power, and do you think that you think that could bring about change if there was a coup?
Yeah, you know, in the past couple of weeks, in summer, it has been a lot of talk of him appointing his son as the supreme leader and the Ayatollah. And the son is not religiously or officially an Ayatollah, which is like a religious title.
Yeah.
So but there has been a lot of talk about his son recently, which is very suspicious. So people say, some commentators mean that the son is going to take over. And if he does, he is a hardliner himself, the supreme leader. And he has this few very harsh, brutal, hardcore people with him. So it's possible that they take control. And it's also possible that they lose control and people can get the power from them, because now today I saw a couple of people from army, which is the opposite of a revolutionary guard, came to social media and said that they will resist the revolutionary guard and the killings that's going on the street in Iran right now. So it would be very interesting to watch what happened. It's very difficult to say what is going to happen. But what we know is that the protest is going on and people are not going back. They know that if they go back, things will be the same, even worse, because the regime now is like a snake that's injured. So they know that if they don't resist, if they don't protest, so everything will go back and it will get worse. So they're risking their lives, they're giving their lives, because they don't want this regime. This regime must go.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a minute. I know that they're restricting internet access so that, I guess people can't protest. And also protesters are being killed. Any sense of how large that is, how many protesters have been killed, and what is it the Revolutionary Guard that's cracking down on the protesters?
Senator, I've been reading reports from BBC Persian reporter that some of the people who are suppressing people, these are people who are killing unarmed protesters with very barbaric methods on the street. I saw a video tonight that shook me up. when a group of this paramilitary attacking a young student, and I am not quite sure if he's dead now, or and it's on the video. It's the video has been shared on Twitter. So these are, some say that these are paramilitaries that have fought in Syria, and they have been transferred to Iran to fight for the regime. And these are people who are good for combat. So you can just imagine what the barbarism and cruelty that they use. And
and also, given that, yeah, go ahead. No, go ahead.
Yes, and yes, and the last report I read about a human rights organization that's stationed here in Norway, and is very accurate, and said more than 100 people have been killed, and many of them young girls, just like Mahsa, the same age. Many of them young guys. I have reports here of 15 years old, 16 years old, 17 years old kids who have been shot to death.
We've just had a listener write in from Vermont, and she is asking, given, I guess, what you just said, whether you feel that you're in any danger there in Norway as you speak out about this publicly. Do you feel like you're in danger?
Yes, I have to say that I have I am under, I have the my identity is covered. I my address and everything is covered, so I to keep myself safe. Yes, there is a security issue here in Norway. Even in Norway, for me, I was watching Masih Alinejad today, yesterday on CBS, and she was talking to CBS about the situation in Iran from a safe place that FBI put her. This is American soil we are talking about. She was put in a safe place. She is put in a safe place by FBI in the United States of fear that the regime would kill her. So you can imagine what kind of system we are talking about.
Yeah. Well, I hope that answers your question, Carol. This is certainly a different revolution. I remember you're talking about people calling out the government. As I told you before this show started, I worked for Jimmy Carter, and I remember American flags being burned in the street. I remember lots of anti-American slogans. It really was focused outwardly. But wasn't it a widely supported revolution back in the 1970s that threw the Shah out and brought the religious government in the first place? And attitudes have changed enough that you think there's been an about face on this, that people are now upset with this government. Is that right? I mean.
I didn't quite understand the question. Was it right to support, you mean the clergies, you mean?
No, I mean it seemed that at the earlier revolution of the 70s had a lot of popular support. And now it doesn't, this government that it created no longer has that popular support. It's no longer popularly supported. I guess what I'm asking is, are we seeing a handful of people stand up to the government, brave people stand up to the government, or do you think this is widespread? This is a widespread sentiment in Iran.
Senator, this regime is very unpopular. I guarantee you, because I follow Iranian news, and these people who are risking their lives right now, those are so brave that they know they are going to be killed. They know they will lose their life, but they say that they don't have anything to lose. But, if you watch the videos coming out of Iran, you see Iranians on the, shouting down death to dictator from their windows because they are afraid to come down on the street. Right. Yes, and you see people, you know, honking their cars to show they are supporting the demonstrators who are on the street. And people, if they rent bullets, if they rent batons, if they suppression, millions and millions of people would demonstrate. But Iranian, this is a military, religious, extremist government. So they are afraid. You can't see thousands and thousands of people coming to the street unless they know they are not going to be shot. But at the same time, like I said, the protests started some 2.5 weeks ago, and I mean we are entering the third week. So, and people are not stopping; they are protesting. Like I said, they are being killed, but they keep going because they know there is no turning back. And I remember, I mean, I've been reading a lot about the Iranian Revolution of 79. And then you see that millions of people are on the street. That is when the army has surrounded there. You have to realize that. The army in Iran surrounded there, and people came to the street, millions of people. And not millions, I don't know, 100,000 or whatever. But this is different now. This is a government that shoots people and armed people. They beat people to death. So these are paramilitaries that are good for combat that are on the streets suppressing people. It's not a simple matter. But if you talk to Iranians, if you come to social media, you know, I give you an example. There is this singer, yes, Shervin Hajilu, who sang a song about yearning of Iranian people for a normal life. Imagine that. He sang this song last week, and the video was seen 100 million times, over 100 million.
Wow.
And yes. And then they have arrested him. And now the people are singing his song to show that they are against the government. So this is such a government we are talking about. So we are having a very popular footballer. He used to be a footballer for national team, Ali Karimi. And he has 1 million followers. And he's speaking up against the government. He's not living in Iran. And you see that his post gets, I don't know, 100,000 likes on Twitter. You know, these are people who are showing, and the people are commenting, thousands and thousands of comments that thank you for being our voice. Thank you for voicing our, you know, protest. So this is such a government.
So given that, I mean, obviously, if you're getting 100 million people, you're getting people outside Iran and you talked about this as a regional, the impact it has on the region. Is this a regional movement? I mean, Kurdish women protested in Turkey and Kurdistan. Was that a kind of a preemptive to what's going on in Iran? Did that have an impact on what's going on in Iran? And is it spreading to other areas in the region that also crack down on women in the same way?
Yes, this is also another very good question. Yes, it has an impact on the region. I don't know if you followed the Iraqi demonstrations like a month ago. Iraq was, and Iraqis were on the street protesting Iranians meddling in Iraqis' affair. So, yeah, of course, people are fed up. I remember when Qasem Soleimani, Iranian Revolutionary Guard general, when he was killed by a U.S. drone in Iraq, you know, there were Syrians who came to the street. I remember I was on Twitter, and it was, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock a.m., and people in Syria, they came on the street, and they, they were dancing, and they were so happy. So it definitely has an impact on the region. And also, a lot of people will be happy. And I am sure that this is like a renaissance. This is like for us, to regain, I mean, to take Iran back, like demonstrators, they shout, "We want to take Iran back from the Islamists." And this is what the impact it has, it will have on the region. Because many in the region, they are tired. They are tired of Iran's meddling, and they are tired of war. They want peace. And as long as you have this government, they are going to pursue their ideology. They are going to export the revolution to all these nations. I was a kid when Khomeini came to Iran, I remember. And I remember when he said that I want to export my revolution to the countries, and you know, to Iraq, to the whole region, and go all the way and take over Israel. He wouldn't name Israel by name. He would say Al-Quds, which is the ancient Muslim mosque. So that's their dream. This is their ideology. So it has definitely an impact on the region.
Well, you know, I remember, I'm going to tell you a short story which really sticks in my mind. We had a woman that worked in our office who came from Saudi Arabia to a hospital in Philadelphia when she was 17 to have some surgery done because she had some severe burns. When the surgery was completed and she had recuperated, she walked out of the hospital with no money and nothing else, and she refused to go back to her wealthy family in Saudi Arabia. And I said to her, I said to her, this must be very brave of you not to go back to your family, you know, to cut all ties, because they cut all ties with her. And she said, "Why would I go back to a country that hates women?" She said, "They hate us in Saudi Arabia, and I don't want to go back." You know, I hate to keep on beating on this question, but isn't this about holding women down? Isn't that really at the center of all this? The hijab patrol and the, you know, religious police and all this stuff. Isn't this really about holding women down?
Yes, of course it is about, it is not about holding women down. It is part of their system. And when you hold the women down, you hold the society down. I mean,
yes.
Women are half of the society. So if they work, if they educate themselves, so the society will progress. So by holding women down, they hold the whole society down. And exactly why they are veiling the women, they are because they want to show their that's the symbol. The hijab is the compulsory hijab is their symbol. So they want to show their symbol in society. And also they are holding women down in most of this. Islamic countries, and some of them worse than the other. So they are having problems with, the rules are not updated, and the rules holds women down, and if you hold a population down, so you can rule easier. If the population is enlightened, so they are having a lot of problem ruling.
Well, that, you know, my wife would disagree with you. She would say women are 90% of the society because they do so much of the work. But we certainly see this in the United States as well, right? We've just seen a Supreme Court overturn a decision which is as old as the Iranian of the original revolution. So this is a sentiment that's spreading throughout the world. And do you have a message to other countries about this revolution? Do you have a warning that they should be involved because it not only reflects on Iran and the region, but also on the world?
I think what a universal message I can give is that women's rights is also human rights. And yes. in a place where they are discriminating women, they will eventually discriminate men and every citizen. So it's a sign. So they start with women and then they go to other citizens. So one must be very careful when you see this, these signs that they are holding women down, they are restricting them. So it's a very bad sign. So it shows that the society goes in a direction that the other people can be discriminated and can be suppressed and hold down, held down.
Can women vote in Iran?
Yes. You see, in the Iranian women are very well educated. They are, last time I read, about 60% were had university education. Of
wow.
course, there is no job. I mean, yes, they are very educated. If you go to Iran, you see Iranians all over society, and that's not because that's not thanks to the Ayatollahs or the clergy. We had a secular ruling in Iran for 35 years. And I remember when Khomeini came, he said that women should cover themselves. And he thought that when they go out to universities, to schools, and also to public offices, and he thought that women would stay home. And a lot of women protested, and back then, and again, they were suppressed. They were men, armed men, who said that you have suppressed their demonstration. I mean, 8th March 1979, women, thousands of women came on the street in Tehran to defy Khomeini. Khomeini's, order for women to cover themselves, but they were met with armed Islamists who said that you have to cover yourself or you will be killed. So there was no, and Khomeini thought that Iranian women will go back to their homes and will not come out. But Iranians, they put out this compulsory hijab, they came out. If you go to Iran, you see Iranian women all over the society. They have been fighting 40 years to educate themselves, to get jobs. It's very difficult in a system that discriminates women openly, but they are fighting for their rights. So Iran is very different because, you know, we have had a secular movement, a women rights movement that goes back to 1900. It started back then. So, yeah, that... Yeah, I lost the thread.
I'm just wondering, given that women are getting fed up and they have the vote, there's no way for them to vote out the regime? You can't vote out the current regime? I guess you have to have an election, first of all.
Oh, yeah, that was the question, yes. Yes, they can vote, and the vote was the voting right was given to them by Shah of Iran. They didn't have the right to vote, and the first person who defied him in 1962, I think, was Khomeini back then. So yeah, they can vote, but this is it's like, how can you vote out the regime, which the regime is a dictatorship. So you can vote out the dictatorship. Each 4 years, they are having these parties or these people who are appointed by their leader. He has to approve them, and then you can choose between bad and worse.
Yeah. Well, we've certainly had those choices too. Many times in American politics, people say that we're making the choice between bad and worse. But we're you know, and I think, you know, if I just could add something here, I just think that people around the world, especially women, should join together and stand up with the brave people of Iran, especially the women who are, I mean, I've seen women on TV cutting their hair in public, throwing their jobs in the fire. I think we should all stand up with these brave women, because you know what happens in one country often spreads to another, and we all have a common interest in justice and human rights, right? And as you said earlier, women's rights are human rights. But let me ask you, because we're running out of time here, what do you want to say? What question haven't I asked you? What do you think is important for people to know that maybe we haven't talked about?
I think we covered the most essential subjects. My quest, I am begging you, please support the Iranian people, Iranian women, but also Iranian men in their fight for freedom, for dignity, and for human rights. They are giving their lives. They are risking their lives to get to get rid of this regime and to live a normal life. Living a normal life has become the yearning of Iranian people. Please support them. Please don't forget them. Stand by them and do not forget them. They are giving their lives right now on the streets in Iran.
Well, I would say that's the perfect thing to say. And you're right. That is the goal, I think, of people around the world. And it's time for us to all pull together and make sure that human rights become universal rights. And certainly the people of Iran right now, the protesters, and especially the women, are an inspiration, should be an inspiration to us all to stand up for human rights. And I just want to thank you for the work you do, because I know it can't be easy, even from Norway. It must be very difficult for you, and you yourself are very brave for doing this. We're also so thankful that you came on the show. Let me point out to our listeners that we're doing this show live. Mina has come on the show, and it's almost 2 o'clock in the morning where she is. So she's really made a great effort to be with us tonight and spread this message. And we thank you, and we hope that you will come back as things develop. Maybe we can have you back later on, and hopefully you'll be able to come back and say that things are getting better, that you're getting support, and that the revolution is working. So thank you so much for being on the show, and we hope to have you back again sometime soon.
Thank you so much from the bottom of my heart for inviting me and listening to me. I'm really honored. Thank you again. I'm really honored to be invited and to get this message out. Thank you again.
You're welcome. Yeah. And every week we end our show with a song. We dedicate this song to the brave women of Iran, and also to Mina. Here's Tracy Chapman with a song called Talking About a Revolution. Thanks so much, folks, and we'll see you next week.
Don't you know, you're talking about a revolution that sounds give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.